Blog Talk Radio.
And live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is the one and only Scarycast, the official paranormal network of the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And today, we're very excited to have the keynote speaker for the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, one of our own co-hosts. So tonight, she's not a co-host, she's our very special guest, or the guestest with the mostest, as I called her this afternoon, Robin McCray. So first of all, I want to introduce our co-host. And then I will introduce the one and only Queen of Scarycast, who's our special guest, Robin McCray. First of all, from the Midlands of South Carolina, the Surgeon General of Scarycast, the man with lots of medical expertise and keeps us all alive, Trey Dunaway, the doctor. How are you doing tonight, Trey?
I'm doing fine, John, other than telephone difficulties, but I'm connected now, so I'm good.
Well, that's great. We are certainly glad to have you. And from Houston, Texas, Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
I'm cold, but I'm great.
You're what?
I'm cold, but I'm doing good.
Oh, I thought you said you were old, and I was going to say, how dare you? Okay, well,
no.
Great. We're glad you're cold, but great, and life is going well down there in Houston. And so anyway, tonight, Robin McCray is going to be here. She and her husband are the keynote speakers for the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. They're going to be talking from about 10 o'clock in the morning until about 11:45. And they've got lots of stuff to tell us. Good evening, Queen of Scarycast, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How's everybody else doing? Good to hear everybody's voices.
Yeah, it is. I think we're all primed and ready to go. We're going to have a great show on April the 1st at the Dillard House, Dillard, Georgia, the most northern corner of Georgia, up there nestled between North and South Carolina. Prime Bigfoot country. And Robin and Pat are going to talk about Bigfoot. So, Robin, we had I did a short interview with you and one with Ryan. Oh my goodness,
Trimbley.
I lost Ryan. Ryan Trimbley, that's right. It was too long of a day today. I can tell you that. You and Ryan Trimbley each did a short interview, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what are you going to be talking about and what is Pat going to be talking about when you're doing your keynote speech from 10 to 11:45 or so. Tell us, and then we'll ask you some questions.
Okay. Basically, we're going to talk about the Bigfoots as a physical presence and as well as a paranormal presence. We're going to talk about our own personal experiences and the craziness that goes on a daily basis, especially this last week. And just kind of, we want to be able to answer questions for people. We want to ask the audience, hey, if you've got a question, we don't know everything, but if we have an answer, we want to be able to help you with that. And just kind of go over what we've learned throughout the course of the years. And probably some of the other cryptids as well.
I know you've learned a lot, and I would like to remind everybody how you and I met. It was the first Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and I got an email from this lady named Robin McCray saying, Dr. Igor Burtsev asked me to contact you about speaking at your conference. And the first thing I thought was, why is Igor Burtsev contacting me? This is the first Georgia Bigfoot Conference. But he did, and he did it through you. I said, well, may I call you and discuss this? And you said yes. That was about 10:45 at night. So about 2 in the morning, I said, Robin, I got to go to sleep. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And we left the phone call as best friends. And we've always been best friends. You've been a great source of good advice. You keep me out of trouble. And you've taught me a lot about the Bigfoots. So if you were going to do the same thing for our audience, to teach them about Bigfoot and some of the things that you know, how would you go about doing it? Now, that's a leading question to talk about Bigfoot, Robin, okay?
First of all, I try not to approach anybody as a lecture. Nobody wants to be lectured to. People want to be taught to. And, you know, one of the things that I tell everybody on any show I'm on or anything I do is I am not an expert. I'm someone that's had a lot of experiences of which I'm happy to share. But everybody is important when it comes to learning information. Whether you've had an encounter, whether you haven't had an encounter, your views are every bit as important as the people that do have encounters. And the reason that is because it's going to take all of us together to learn. You never stop learning in this field of research. I learn things daily. I mean, really, I do. And so does Pat. You're never going to know it all. They're never going to let you know it all. And so when you talk to people about it, you don't want to lecture them. You just want to just a normal conversation. You know, I try to let people know that, you know, I understand the point of view where people at some point think that they're animals or an ape or whatever. The reality of the situation is, I think at one point we all started that way. As you're around them, as you encounter them, and you watch them and they teach you about their culture and their laws and their way of life and their family units. And you realize that they have not only their language, they can speak our language. They have laws. They have an alphabet. They are a type of human. They are not our type of human, but they are a type of human. And I worked on a DNA study with Dr. Melva Ketchum. It was conclusively proven through 3 genomes that they are part human. And we kind of, Pat and I, when we talk in front of people, and we're also doing a show on the 30th of March, Pat and I are, and it'll be the same way. You know, we talk about their culture. We talk about their way of life. We are sharing this planet with them. And the more we can do to learn from them and they learn about us, the easier it's going to be. They're not all great and good. They're not all bad. There's more good of them than bad, just like our own people. And I do try to get people to run that comparison because we have bad people and we have good people. It's not any different with them. There are a lot of cryptids out there in this big world that people have never known existed, and they're starting to come to the forefront now, and they're making their presence known. They don't necessarily want anything from us other than to be let to live their lives just as we do. And you have to find a level of respect between the two. And that's really what it's all about. You know, I feel like I've been very blessed that they've shared as much of themselves with me as they have as far as teaching me and Pat and other people that I associate myself with that have worked around them. And you learn a lot, but you have to have your mind open enough for it. So basically, Pat and I are going to go up there, and we're just going to tell our story. And we're going to ask people, you know, if you have a question, if we don't know the answer, we have no problem saying, we don't know, because nobody knows it all. And if they have a different opinion, as long as it can be shared in a respectful manner, I want to hear that opinion. Maybe you're right and I'm wrong and you're going to show me something else. We learn from each other. That's what it's all about. There's, you know, it's a collective. It's a unity. And the only way we're going to learn anything is together. And so that's pretty much, you know, what we try to get across to people. I know I've got several people that are coming from out of state to see Pat and I, as well as we've got some great speakers. Pat and I are not going to be the only ones. We've got Matt Delph. We've got Jessica Jones. We've got Lynn Myers. I mean, we've got a lot of really good people. Trey's going to be there as far as I know. Aren't you, Trey?
No, I'm not going to be there this year. I've got another commitment.
Oh,
so I'm not going to
so
be
sorry.
There this year. I'm sorry.
I was so hopeful you
too.
Were. And John will be there. We're going to, you know, get up there and talk and try to spread as much information as possible. We want this to be fun. We want people engaged. But we also want to get some good, solid information out there. You know, what are the easiest ways and the safest ways and the most respectful ways to interact with them. A lot of people don't know that. We want to talk about, you know, when they do certain things, rather than automatically assume they're trying to frighten you or harm you, a lot of times that's not the case at all. You know, there's a big difference in how they live their life and how we live ours. And so we need to be able to bridge that gap and say, hey, if this is what's going on, rather than panic, this is what it could be as well. And this is, you know, a way that you can try to handle or try to find a way for people to, you know, when you encounter them, to have it safely for our people as well as theirs.
Right. And, you know, Robin, I want to make a comment. I want to share a short story with everybody about, you know, maybe they try not to scare you. Okay, you ready for this one, Robin?
Okay.
So I'm going up to Clayton, Georgia to see the Chamber of Commerce. It was a couple of years ago. I was trying to get ready for the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And I saw on Facebook that my friend Will Rodriguez had a birthday that day. And I was actually early. It was hard to believe. I'd just driven like a maniac. So it was about 12 o'clock, and I had an appointment at 2 o'clock. So what happened was I got up there, and so I decided to go up to see Will up in the mountains. And so I went, I knocked on his door. He said, wow, John. And he had a couple of people there. I said, I want to just come by and say happy birthday. He said, thanks. These people did too. So we had a rousing, a very nice time for about an hour. And I said, well, I got to go. And, you know, it's such a cloudy, drizzly, beautiful day in North Georgia, because I sometimes think those days are very pretty too. I said, I'm just going to go stand next to your cabin and just look and soak it up for 10 minutes, then get on my way. He said, that'd be great, John. I said, so now you know why I'm standing there, and I'm not waiting to be beamed up by a UFO. So anyway, I'm standing there, and just, you know, you can hear the rain droplets fall on the leaves. It's just a beautiful, dreary little day in Clayton, Georgia. And I'm sitting there, standing there, and I see this I don't know, it was like a rectangular thing about 4 feet by 3 feet. It came up off the ground, and that thing got launched 50 feet above a pine tree. And it came crashing down. And I said, that's so you know what I did? I noticed there was a dark figure right next to that tree. And so I waved at that dark figure, and the dark figure waved back and vanished. Now let me explain how smart that Bigfoot was. If he had wanted to walk down that dirt road and come up and see me and say, hey, John, I'd have had a heart attack. I'd have flat out had a heart attack. But the way he did that was he let me know he was there. He let me see him for a moment. Maybe he didn't wave, but I kind of thought he did. Maybe this, maybe that. But I saw kind of a humanoid figure right where that thing had come up and down. I think it was part of some bark from a tree. And I realized how smart Bigfoot was. That's the way Bigfoot was saying, hey, John, but didn't want to frighten me to death. Because I'm tell you what, if Bigfoot comes walking down the road and comes up and shakes my hand, he's going to be shaking the hand of a dead man, Robin. So that's how smart they are. And I mean that's very smart. I was impressed.
They're highly intelligent.
They are.
They really are. And the problem solving skills they have is astronomical. You know, we may think that we are smart on certain degrees, but they are every bit as smart, if not smarter, maybe in different ways than we have. That doesn't take away from our things, but they truly, truly are highly intelligent.
Right, and I think that's one way that Bigfoot evidence his smartness was, well, not scaring me to death, but letting me know he was there. So that's all I've got.
Yeah.
That's my little story, my contribution to tonight. And so tell us one more thing about the Bigfoots. Then I'm going to open it up for questions from Dr. Trey Dunaway and Kyler. So give us something with some meat on it that. Not turkey, but, you know, a little bit of meat, just teasing. A little bit of meat, and so we can maybe think about that as we ask our questions.
Well, I'm trying to think what would be the best thing to put out there for you guys that I haven't already done. They just have an array of abilities, and this is where it gets really tricky for everybody because it really is hard to comprehend, and I get that. I mean, I've had to come to terms with it on and off through my whole life, and every time I think I've got it figured out, oh, this is what all they can do, they throw a monkey wrench in it, and they do more things. But the paranormal abilities that they have and that they possess, they're limitless. There's truly nothing that they can't accomplish. I've watched them levitate. I've watched them open portals and go into them. I've watched them cloak standing within a few feet of me. I've been outside when I was in Michigan and walking in the snow and watched their footprints being made next to me, and you couldn't see anything there. You know, I've watched them shapeshift into other things. It's just, it's unbelievable. You know, we had this last 3 or 4 days, they have just been rocking it out for whatever reason outside. They're having a field day. And Pat and I were able to get some good pictures the other night, which was fun. But they're just, they never stop to amaze you. And I will say this, when you see them, and I've seen them multiple times, every time is like the first time. That thrill never goes away. You can see them 1,000 times, and that 1,001 time that you see them, you will be every bit as excited as you were the first time. But it all comes down to respect. It comes down to the manner that you have towards them, and a lot of times you will get that in return. Now, again, like I said before, they aren't all good, but neither are our people. And there are far more good ones than there are bad ones. But there are, I always tell everybody, the good ones love on a much deeper level than we ever hope to imagine. But every emotion they have is deeper and harder than what we have. So in that same respect, the ones that are bad are lethal. There doesn't seem to be anything in between. But there are primarily more of the good ones than there are the bad ones.
All right. Well, that's a cool thing to say. All right, we're going to start with Kyler. Kyler, do you have a question for Robin about anything that she said? Because she said a lot, and it's all been very interesting.
I kind of have a random one, actually, that I've never even thought about sometimes. So normally when you think of monsters or animals or I guess just in the wide range of everything sci-fi, I guess you could say. I always think of like one thing always has a rival or something that is attacking it or taunting it all the time. Do they have something or someone that they're always kind of fighting back and forth with or, I guess, rivals?
Not any more than we do. You know, like people fight and argue and carry on. They do as well. Some areas they will live in the same territory that the dogmen do. And they do one of two things. They either share the territory but ignore each other or they interact. The ones by my house interact. The ones in Michigan interacted. We even had a hybrid that was born from a dogman and a Bigfoot. There are other areas that simply will not share that territory. And in those cases, yeah, there will be wars over it. And that same respect, it goes, you know, with the goat men and the cat people and all these other things. So you can't say across the board that they will never get along because that's incorrect. I know several habituators and contactees that actually have both on their property, but there still are some areas that they are absolutely adamant they will not share. And then you
okay,
can get,
so then,
you know, fighting amongst those. So it is possible, yeah.
So in those areas, do we actually know what those are? Like, has there been reports of a whole bunch of missing people or, I guess, injured people in those areas?
Well, they're in different spots all around the world as far as that goes because they're everywhere on the planet. I mean, even the Hawaiian Islands have them. They have a smaller version. So it just really, I don't think it's a matter of it's, you know, this state or that state. It's just the groups that are in those area. And, you know, you get to land between the lakes over there between Tennessee and Kentucky. And those are, even the Bigfoot there are highly aggressive. the dog men are highly aggressive. They go there because they don't like humans, our humans. They don't want to be by us, you know. And then, of course, we go in there because everybody thinks that way they can see one, and it's like curiosity killed a cat. It's just a bad idea. Now, I know several researchers that have gone in there and not been attacked, but, you know, you're taking a gamble when you do. And but there are different pockets where they just don't want, you know, I mean, as far as to give a location, I can't really do that because I know people that in there, they might be in one state and that particular area, they won't share it. But then you can go an hour and a half away from them and they're fine there. It's not any different than with our people. You know, like you go into Michigan and Detroit and there's gangs and everything and they're all fighting and this person wants this area and this gang wants that area. It's basically the same thing. You know, I know a lot of people that have said repeatedly, you will never find them in the same place. But for every one person that says that, I can find you 20 that said they've got both on their property and they interact. I have a picture of a dogman that was a hybrid from a Bigfoot and a dogman. And the one Bigfoot was standing next to her. You know, so they absolutely will get along, but that doesn't mean they all will. Again, it really just depends on the ones that are there, the individuals. And then, again, I always go back to, with our people, we have the same thing. Like I said, you know, you go to Detroit, Michigan, and you got this gang against that gang, and they don't share territory. They want nothing to do with each other. You know, or you go into an area that's predominantly one nationality and they don't want to let another one in, or if they're there, you know, they are not treated well.
It's so weird to think about sometimes, because like if they were, I mean, they're obviously, we've talked about it multiple times, like they're obviously way smarter and capable of more than we are, so you would think that the conflict there would just be, wouldn't exist. But I guess not.
Well, and then you've got Gugwe. And Gugwe, they look very similar to a Bigfoot, but the face, they have a snout like a baboon. And these things kill. That's what they do. And so if they come into an area, anything that's there, whether it's a Bigfoot, a dogman, a cat person, a goat man, whatever, they will fight with them because that is the last thing anybody wants here. They are deadly and they are lethal. So we find very often that in the areas that these Gugwes try to move into, whatever cryptid is there, they will fight with them to try to get them out.
Hmm.
I mean, they literally will kill anything, whether it's our human, the cryptids, whatever. They are just, that's what they do.
Okay. So then along that, I also have another question really quick. Have they ever had humans live with them and walk with them?
Yeah.
Like ever?
Yeah. I don't know of a lot of people that have actually lived with them like that, but I do know of a few. And then if you look back, Igor Borstov, years ago, back to when Zaina was in, I don't know if it was the Ural Mountains that she was at or not, but he did a lot of
research. Oh, my God, that is one of the most famous names in all of Bigfoot literature.
Yeah. And
Zaina.
She was captured by the townsmen, and they've kept her in a cage for a while, and then she was taught how to help this guy at the house. And she actually, you know, she stayed in a barn for a while, and then she was in the house with them, and he had her help in the house. But the villagers, the men, would rape her, and she actually had several children. And some of the children died because as soon as they were born, she would take them to the river and she would wash them off, and then they would get sick from the cold. But she did have some that survived. Kuit was one. And we actually, Igor gifted me a tooth from Zaina and one from Kuit, and Dr. Malva Ketchum has them now. So she's got the Cryptid Genome Project working again. So those will get tested during that. But, yeah, I mean, so they have at times interacted with humans in that manner. And I personally do not believe that is the only case. You know, I've grown up around these things, and I know they get very familiar with certain people. I've talked to different people that have claimed that they knew people that had them that actually would come into the house and live with them or whatever. Does it happen often? I don't believe that it does happen very often, only because one of the laws that they have forbids it. But that doesn't mean it's never happened.
Wow.
Now, Robin, I've got a story to tell you that I learned up at Lakemont, Georgia, which is a little community about 7 miles outside of Clayton. And if I can ever find a piece of land in Lakemont, I'm going to buy it. I don't care if I have to sell everything that I've got. I want to live at Lakemont, Georgia. And there is a story that in the mid-1800s, there were families that lived on that mountain, which is now the mountain right next to Lake Raven, and they traded articles of, of some substance with a clan of Bigfoot. And that happened frequently. It's like they'd trade food. They'd trade all kinds of things. And
absolutely.
Those stories,
Native Americans. I mean, it goes back to Native Americans used to do that. There were certain, my understanding, and it's limited on this part, but my understanding is that there were certain Native American tribes that they fought vehemently with. They would steal each other's children. There was like almost a territory line that neither one would cross. But there was also several Native American tribes that they did trade with and they interacted with and they had treaties with, as far as, you don't come after us, we don't come after you, but they did trade.
Right.
So absolutely.
These were actually white settlers in the mountains of Georgia. And I think that's kind of revolutionary. That story has been told to me by several people and different people. So there's, it lets me know that if several people are telling me that story and they're not related, there's a high probability that there might be some kind of truth in it.
Well, in those cases, I believe there is. I think that happens a lot more than we realize, because even as habituators, and I've been habituating with them 98% of my entire life, and I know multiple people that also do, and they do that. They do like a barter system. If you gift them something, do not be surprised if they gift something back. And that right there shows you that this is something that they've done for generations upon generations upon generations, with various people. As far as like living in the home with them, like Zaina did, that's a little bit different and not as common. Not impossible, absolutely not impossible, but not as common. But as far as, that trading back and forth, I believe they still do that today, because if we gift them something, every single time something appears. And I could literally tell you 100 people that it's the same thing happens. They'll leave something out for them. When I was in Michigan, in the group that I had there, we had like 63 or 64 that was in that group that would wander in and out. And I had stuff out for them all the time. And they would come and get what I left them, and they always left me something. Unfortunately, it was usually a live possum that they thought I would want to eat. But regardless, I was left something, or they would put a rabbit on my porch with the head off of it so that I could eat the rabbit, which I didn't, but that was, the thought process behind it. Or I would wake up and there would be a pile of flowers on my porch or something. So they are very, very intent on that. Of course, but they're very, when it comes to receiving gifts from them, they're very appreciative of that. And so I think that's a lot more common than people realize, that interaction of that give and take. I've not known them to be anywhere, the ones that I've interacted with anyway, where it's just take, 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 take. Even when they've taken stuff here and like they've swiped some of the animal food and that kind of thing, there's always something left. They've gotten into my cupboards a few times and they're, it'll happen and maybe there'll be a white rock left or something, or the next day something, will show up. And it's, in lieu of the fact that they trade, because I think that's what they did primarily with the Native Americans, was they traded back and forth.
Right. Okay, well, that's a great answer. Now, I tell you what, I'm going to ask a question to close this session down. But first, Dr. Trey Dunaway, I'm sure you have an interesting question or two for Robin about what we've been talking about.
I do, Robin, and it's something that you mentioned that I never really either I never heard or I never appreciated it or I never really thought about it much, but the languages of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
You said they have their own alphabet of sorts.
Yeah.
And what does it, is it one dialect? Is it multiple dialects depending on regional variations, or is it pretty much a common language? Tell me more about the languages. And here's a couple of questions, just spinning them off. You can just work it in your response. What does it sound like? I presume, obviously you've heard them speak among each other. So what does it sound like? And do you know any words in the Bigfoot vocabulary and the dialect that you've been exposed to? And how do they record? If they've got an alphabet, they must record. And how do they record their words in a Bigfoot language?
Well,
are great questions.
They're awesome. They have their own language, okay? And when they speak, it really and truly sounds like gibberish. They speak extremely quick, extremely fast. It's hard to identify what they're saying. When we speak, our vocals come out of the top of our throat almost. When they speak, it comes down in the clavicle and the chest area. They have a wider range. They can go much deeper and much higher than we can as well. Okay, when they pronounce the letters, it's much different than we pronounce ours. And then depending on the area that they're at, and I know this is where it gets really crazy, depending on the area that they're at is what language they speak of ours. Like if when they're in Siberia and I went to the conference in Siberia, they would talk to me in Russian. But at the same time, I would say to them, I can't understand what you're saying. I don't speak Russian. You have to speak my language. And I was very, very shocked and amazed when they were able to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one here in the States, they have no problem with English. If you go where there's no longer English, that's what they're going to speak. They tend to pick up whatever language from wherever they're at. As far as the words, I assumed that, and I was wrong in my assumption years ago, that different words that we said meant, had the same meaning across the board. And I'm finding as I've gotten older and experienced more that I don't personally believe that's the case. I have a very dear friend in Louisiana, and the ones in Louisiana call themselves the Sukulu, and they have specific words that mean different things, like Okum would be a bad person. But yet, I can say Okum here for bad person, and mine will kind of like, yeah, okay, but this is what we call it, and it just varies. It's a regional variation, and I guess the only way I can explain it would be when you go state to state or even out of the country, that language changes and the meanings change, and it's pretty much from my understanding of what they've taught me and what I've observed, the same thing with them. I believe that there are some words that are across the board, but I have noticed a lot of differential. Now, Janice Carter, the ones that she encountered in Tennessee, she has a book that was written, and before Mary Green passed away, was blessed enough to get a book of it, and it has all these words in it. When I was living in Michigan, I took those words and I tried to use it with my clan, and they looked at me like I was an idiot. And that's when it kind of clicked in my brain, okay, the ones where I were living at, those were Ojibwa tribes that used to be on that land. In Tennessee, it was different. So my own understanding, and I could be wrong, but what I've observed is it tends to be they imitated a lot of the Native Americans, I think, to a degree, in whatever area they were in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the best vocals I have ever heard in my entire life, and that includes even when I've listened to them at my home, Ron Moorhead did on the Sierra Sounds in the Sierra Mountains. Absolutely. I strongly encourage anybody that's interested in this topic to listen to these things. Ron Moorhead sells them, and they are absolutely beyond incredible. And you do hear him talking in their language, but you also hear them talking in ours. He never set out to do this. He encountered them at his camp that he went to yearly, to go hunting with some friends, and they were there, and he was able to get some wonderful, wonderful recordings. Now, we've had them here, you know, sit outside the window at night, and you can hear them. And when I was in Michigan, they would come, there was two females that would come and sit under my window. And they would chatter amongst themselves, and it sounded like gibberish. It truly did. I couldn't make heads or tail out of it. It was too fast, and I couldn't even identify a word in it. But yet, if I were out in the woods and I would say something, they would answer back in my language. And when I say that they can speak in our language, it doesn't mean it's as clear as what we have. The voice range is different. The way they pronunciate it with their mouth is different. You know, so sometimes it's not as clear as what per se we would make it, but they definitely can speak our language.
And is there a dialect difference in when they're speaking English in the South versus the North? Is there a Southern accent with the people from the South compared to the North?
You know, I think a lot of people would say, no, there isn't. But I'm going to be honest with you. The ones I've heard here, I haven't noticed a huge difference, maybe a slight. But then you have to realize that every individual, just like with our people,
right,
every individual is speaking differently. So I'm not going to say that I think there's a slang to it, or a twang, I guess they call it, if you're speaking in the South. I haven't noticed that. But I have noticed that every individual pronunciates a little bit differently. You know, like Pat and I have heard them call our names when we were out in the yard. And it sounds just like it would when we were in Michigan. But then there's other times, you know, you hear them and there is a variation in it. And, again, they travel so much because they're going in and out of portals. And, you know, they're here 1 minute and they're somewhere else, you know, 5 minutes later. So you have a lot of that comes and goes. But they can absolutely do our language here. Now, there was one in the backyard like 2 or 3 days ago, and I took the dog out, and he was out there. It was the funniest thing. He never really spoke. He was just out there making that noise like a horse does when they kind of like blow.
Right.
You know, and you hear him. And he did that 4 or 5 times, and he wasn't mad. He wasn't stomping his feet or having a hissy fit. But I had the dog out there, and I said, just, you know, give me a minute. She's almost done, and then I'll bring her in the house. And right after that, he quieted down, and he was fine. You know, where normally they'll sit there, and you'll hear them say words. And he didn't really want to talk. He, you know, he was making that noise. He was adamant. He wanted me to know he was there, but he wasn't upset. He wasn't shaking the bushes or doing anything stupid. He was just making these funny noises with his lips. But then that brings us to the next point where they can imitate us speaking to the point that they sound exactly like us. And it's fascinating. It's amazing. It's problematic. Because in my case, at that time, I had 3 of my kids still living at home. And my ex-husband and I were married at the time. He was out in the woods hunting, and he came in just absolutely livid. He said, thanks a heck of a lot. You come out there and you're out there talking to me, and you scared all the deer off. And I said, I've never left the house.
They were mimicking you.
Oh, absolutely. And he was so angry at me that I had scared away the deer. And my kids looked at him and said, Dad, Mom never left the house. She's been in the kitchen the whole time, and we've been in the living room. None of us left the house. And he said, well, I've known you for 15 years, and that was your voice. And that's when it kind of like dawned on me, okay, dingbat, you knew they could imitate all the wildlife. Why would you think they couldn't imitate you? So the new house rule was to the kids, if you're outside and one of us calls you, whether it's myself, your dad, whatever, calls you out in the woods to them, if you don't physically have an eyesight on us and see us, you are not to go. You absolutely are not to go. You are not going to get grounded. You are not going to be in trouble. You are not to go unless you have a visual of us. And I don't care if we're telling you we're dead and dying. And unless you have a visual, you do not go because they sound that real. And we had a storm one time that knocked all the power lines down. Oh, it was just terrible. Power lines were down in the front yard, and the whole woods was all torn apart. And one of my older kids was there at the time, and he came in and he said, hey, Mom, he said, I think one of your friends out there is hurt because I can hear a baby crying. And I said, what? He said, I'm telling you, it sounds like a baby, a real human baby, and it's crying. So I immediately, you know, mind spoke and asked who it was, and they told me, you know, that the pole had come down and the baby was hurt or whatever. So I started out the door, and my son's like, no, I don't want you out there, Mom. There's wires everywhere. I'll go out there. And he got quite a ways out there when the female got the baby and got the baby out of there. So he came back in and said, don't worry, that she got the baby. But the fact that they can imitate everything is just uncanny. And it, there's no way to not or to know that that's not them.
Right.
It's
because
that close. I mean,
because there's such a good mimic.
Yeah, it's like we would be, and the animal noises are even worse because we would be in the house and it would be like 10, 15 below zero and we would hear bullfrogs. And we're like, yeah, but it would sound like, you know, a 900-pound bullfrog. You know, it was just crazy. Or be in the house and hear somebody ask you to come outside. Pat, I can't tell you how many times Pat's been in the backyard mowing the lawn, and somebody will say, Pat, Pat, over here, or Pat, Pat, you know, something. And he can hear them. They've done it to me. They've done it to him. And so that's why we put that whole rule down with the kids of, if you don't see us, it doesn't matter what we're telling you is going on. If you do not see us, you do not come. You know, fortunately,
right.
We never
right.
had, you know, they would talk to the kids, but they never called them in.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah,
it
the language
really
is just
is.
Incredible. The alphabet doesn't look anything like ours whatsoever. The only reason I've even seen the alphabet, and I got to give Janice part of the credit for that, was her, and I believe his name was Roy Wagner. Roy Wagner had actually done his research to figure out what their alphabet is. Now, is that correct? I don't know. I know that Pat took the alphabet that we had seen that Roy had done up, and he wrote a sign that said, welcome, friends, and he put it outside. And the next day, it looked like there were scratches on it where they were trying to write back. Now, I have a friend up in Massachusetts, and she did for years. She put a pen and paper out. She would leave cookies for one, and she put a pen and paper out, and he wrote back to her in English. And it looked like a child's writing. You know, it wasn't clean cut by any means, but there was writing back.
But they're,
Robin,
they're,
do you have,
where do they, if they
yeah,
have a written language.
What?
If they had a written language, where would they write it?
I don't know. That was the part that always puzzled me. I'm being honest, I don't know. I was told that it's very, very close to Sanskrit.
Uh-huh.
I have seen them messages on trees. They've drawn drawings for me on trees. I've seen letters that they put on trees. I used to have at one point, I had these small, they're about 2 foot tall. They were stakes that you put in the ground. And it was for pets. And you put a wire on it, like a hot wire, and it would keep them from leaving the yard for the dogs. And they
right.
went out one day and they pulled out all the stakes and they laid them all out on the ground and they were putting the letters A and M and N. And there was an X. It was just incredible. I mean, really, every time you think you have your head wrapped around everything about them, you come to the realization
that
your toe hasn't even hit the water.
Facet. Yeah, they show you another facet of their behavior and their culture.
Exactly. I mean, I'm 58 years old. I've been around them since I was a toddler. But I can tell you right now that there's so much more to learn that I'll never be able to learn in my lifetime. You know, it's like no matter how much you learn, don't ever think that you've got your whole foot in the water because you don't. Your toe isn't even in it. It just gets
right.
deeper. It's this rabbit hole that never stops. And we're finding that the other cryptids follow suit with it as well.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, Trey, that was a good line of questioning. First of all, I want to acknowledge our sponsor, Transamerica Life Insurance Company. If you need life insurance, contact me, Dr. John Stamey with Transamerica, 843-655-8775. It will be worth it. Bigfoot should contact me, too, if they need life insurance. That was a little joke, Robin. I'm sorry. And now, Robin, I want to ask you, we've got about 12 minutes left. And I'm going to ask you if you mentioned Janice Carter, who is very well known for her association with Mary Green. And would you tell the, it's an abridged story if we do it in 12 minutes, but can you tell us the story, the amazing story of Fox, who was part of the Mary Green family, and how all that started and how it ended up? Can you do that in about 10 to 11 minutes?
Well, I'll be very honest with you. I can tell you the basics. I would never want to do the whole story in case I got any of it wrong. And I would never want to do that to Janice or to Mary Green. But
the
bottom
be
line
great.
Of that is Janice Carter lived with her grandparents on the Carter farm in Tennessee. Her grandfather, my understanding, and I hope I have this correct, was chopping down a tree, or a tree came down anyway. It landed on Fox as a baby. The grandfather then took Fox, who was just a baby at the time, and he took Fox into the home and nursed him back to health. And the grandmother was there, and eventually when he got well enough, he was running around the house. And they ended up taking him out and putting him in the barn, and the parents came and broke him out of the barn. But he kept coming back, and the grandfather fed him, and he kept coming back and coming back. And, of course, Janice and her sister were living there, and she literally ran into his leg one day. She was carrying a bucket for the grandfather, and she was running and crashed right into him. And, you know, they got to be very good friends, and I think he was probably, from what I learned from Janice, a very big part of her life, as were the other ones that were there. So she had an awful lot of interaction with the whole group.
Okay, and what was the time period that went from?
I honestly could not tell you because I have the book, but I don't have it in front of me right now. So it would be just an absolute guesswork, and I would not want to do that type of a disservice to Janice or her family. I think Janice was only, if I'm correct, and I hope I am, I think she was like 3 or 4 years old when she first met Fox. But he was
okay.
In the house when he was a baby. After he got hurt, but then once he started feeling better, he was just destroying everything. He was running around, you know, and getting into everything. And so they took him out and put him in the barn. And then that's when the parents got him back. But he just kept coming around, and he pretty much grew up there. He was a friend to her grandfather. And then when Janice and her sister were living there, that's when they encountered him, and she built that relationship with him as well as with the other members of the clan and eventually his mate and his children.
Wow.
And my understanding is, you know, the Carter farm has now been sold. I believe her sister still has a small portion of it, but whether or not, you know, she's interacting, I can speculate, but I couldn't tell you for sure. I think people would be amazed at how many of these types of stories there are out there, because it happens. It truly happens. You know, I have talked to countless people that have had them on their property and interacted with them daily. Pat and I do here, you know, they've helped us as far as letting us know there's a fire out in the front yard, you know, due to an electrical pole that was down. I mean, it could have burned up the whole woods in our house, and they were the ones that woke us up to get us out of the house. And when we went out there, they were the ones that were trying to put the sparks that were coming off the power line down onto the leaves. It was fall time, so there was dried leaves on the ground. And as the sparks would come down, it would catch the leaves on fire, and you would see this translucent shape go up to each individual pile as it would catch on fire, and you would see a swirl of smoke go all around the fire, and then all of a sudden it would go down and there would be no more fire. And then the next spark would start something else, and they would go and put that out. So, and they were very helpful right before a hurricane. There was a tree that was getting ready to fall down on the house before the hurricane. And I jokingly said, you know, guys, it would be great if I had a little assistance here And it was not even 20 minutes later. And not only was that tree down, it had been moved off the side of the house and pulled 10 feet behind the trunk. So there's no way it could have fallen like that.
Right. Well, I tell you what, Robin, this has been very illuminating, and this is just a small sample of the things that you and Pat are going to discuss at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, the 6th Annual Georgia Bigfoot Conference, Dillard, Georgia, right down Highway 441 in the middle of Rabun County, just not a stone's throw from North Carolina. We are privileged to be there, one of the finest resorts in America. Thank you to the Dillard family for allowing us to come. We're going to have a great time. We're going to have about 35 vendor tables, about 5 or 6 additional artists from the North Georgia Artists Guild. Robin McRae, Pat McRae will be there. Matt Delph will be there. Jennifer Jones, Jessica Jones will be there. Jessica Jones will be there. Ryan Trembley will be there. Reverend Pat Myers.
Lynn Myers.
Lynn Myers, thank you very much. And also, what we're going to do is we're adding one more event at 4:30. When the last talk is over, we're going to have a panel discussion with all of our commentators, and we're going to have a grand time. We're going to close at 6 o'clock, and we'll all be tired, but everybody should have a good time. So I want to absolutely invite everybody, go online, buy you a ticket, GeorgiaBigfootConference.org, and come visit with Come see Pat McRae. Come see Robin McRae. We're going to have a grand time. We're going to miss Dr. Troy Dunaway.
Well, I think
Dunaway.
It's going to be – I'm sorry, John. I wanted to say I think it's going to be really exciting, and I'm really excited about it, is Ryan Trembley. Now, my understanding is that since he can't be on location, he will be patched in so that he can speak that way, correct?
Right. He's going to be probably doing what Lyle Blackburn did for us a couple of years ago in the Lizard Man Festival when we had COVID. He'll be patched in through Facebook Live.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about it. He has a wealth of knowledge, and he is really a very sweet person. So I think everybody's going to really enjoy that.
Yeah, we're going to have a good time with him. So I wanted to say to everybody – now, next week, we're going to have the second edition of the Georgia Bigfoot Conference preview right here on Scarycast. Everybody listen. First of all, Dr. Trey Dunaway, thank you for being with us tonight.
John, it was a lot of fun.
Well, good, yeah, and so thank you for being with us. Kyler Smith, thank you for being with us.
Of course, yeah, I look forward to these every single week.
Good. We're glad to have you here every single week. And I'm Dr. John Stamey saying goodbye. We'll see everybody next week on the eve of the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, one of the biggest things that will ever happen in Georgia every year. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And now, Robin, can I go ahead and announce our keynote speaker for the 7th Annual Georgia Bigfoot Conference in 2024? Can I go ahead
Sure.
and make that announcement? On 2024, on April the 6th, we are privileged to have, we talked about his accomplishment a little earlier, but the man who developed and recorded the Sierra sounds, Ron Moorhead, is going to be our keynote speaker. We're going to have a little bit of a different format because we got Ron Moorhead, and it's going to be fantastic. And I'm going to have to ask you, Robin, I'm going to put you on the spot. Will you and Pat be there with us?
Always.
Well, great. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Kyler, I hope you'll be there. Trey, I hope you'll be there. And it's going to be another action-packed Georgia Bigfoot Conference. It can't get any bigger than when we have Ron Moorhead. But this year we've got the next best thing, which is Robin and Pat McRae, Matthew Delph, Jessica Jones, Jessica Jones, Ryan Trembley, Lynn Myers, and Dr. John Stamey. I'm going to be moderating the panel at the end of the day. So thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on the one, the only, there's only one, Scarycast. Have a good one. Say
thank
goodbye.
You.
Good night.
Bye, guys.
Bye.